Healthy-ish is recorded live from Lankford Studios in Cedar Hill, Texas. Welcome to Healthy-ish, an educational podcast that navigates love, life, and everything in between. I'm your co-host, Prissy, and together I will be joined with Dr. Key, a relationship intelligence expert. Join us as we tackle some very controversial topics and stories. Due to some of the sensitive discussions regarding relationships and domestic violence, we advise listeners to use caution while listening. Today, we will be discussing a continuation from last week's Black Lives Matter. And following that, we will be dissecting Luther Vandross, Anyone Who Had a Heart, and how it connects to what is going on in today's world. Join us.
You could really hurt and have a heart. And hurt me like you hurt me and be so untrue. What am I to do? Loving you the way I do, I take you back. Without you, I die. And this is exactly what is being illustrated in my mind all over the world. We can't afford to say that these people don't exist. All we can say is that they don't speak for the majority. Mm-hmm. But you have to know that there are people out here that are heartless, that have lost their heart, maybe broken, maybe hurt, maybe shattered, and what did it? Who knows? Maybe there are some things that have happened in the course of their life to cause them to get to that place. But we know that it's not skin tone, because everyone that's out there protesting is not African American. And so it's not a skin tone problem. And the hatred that was displayed on May the 25th was not something that anyone could have done. It had to have been someone that had that level of hatred. And I'm not even sure if it was just because of the skin tone. Of course, I'm sure that it has its place. I think that it's because of the skin tone that he was able to express it so comfortably, the hatred. What do you think?
I absolutely think that's correct. I was watching a YouTube show the other day where they were talking about this incident. They were having callers call in to give their take on the whole thing and the whole matter. And something that he said kind of stuck out at me, where he said that he believed that there are some, and this may be sort of beside the issue, but he said that he does believe that there are some police officers that go into the force because they, they're sociopaths, and they want to control or have some sort of power over people. And not all of them, but some of them do, so it kind of might even speak to the issue of not having a heart. Because what do we know from a psychological standpoint, a sociological standpoint, a standpoint about individuals who are deemed sociopaths or have these antisocial type personalities? They lack the ability to be able to connect with another human being or feel for or have empathy for another human being. They more so want to control or dominate.
Right. And there's some psychological testing that has to be done in order for you to qualify to join the force, which makes it really difficult to understand how they get past that.
Well, when you say psychological, what type of psychological testing? Because I've known some people quite close to me that have tried to go out and join the police force, but I've never heard them speak of a psychological test. So do you, can you shed some light on what that would look like?
The essence of the test is to determine whether the person does have any of those hang-ups, any of those psychological, psychiatric, or physiological issues.
Okay.
And so, yes, they go through a series of tests, lie detectors. To determine their capability on the street and whether they would target certain groups or genders because of certain issues they've had in the past. And so, yeah, it's unfortunate to hear. I think, though, that people may go in with the best intentions. And of course, people know how to answer things correctly.
Right.
They know what right from wrong. They know how to answer it correctly, but still do what they want to do. That's not to negate from that. But a lot of things that happen in the street, and that's something that people don't want to deal with and don't want to excuse. But police officers get to see the worst of the worst, right? Mm-hmm. They get to see the black people and everything they do wrong. Most of the crimes that are criminally initiated are minorities. Let's face it, that's what they have access to, that's what they've trained on, that's what's learned in the neighborhoods and communities. And so doesn't say that only black people and brown people commit offenses, but that's what the police officers are going to more likely see on the street. Other crimes that are being committed, especially the white collar crimes, fraud and embezzlement and arson and some of those crimes, thefts, those are crimes committed by other races and nationalities, and you usually find that person later on. It's not street, on the street, right? On the beats that you find those people. Those detectives find them after doing some investigations, right? And so you get to see the gory of it all. People call in panic. You get out there and you see these people just, you know, live it. In the worst, probably in some instances, the worst place of their ever in their life, lowest point of their life. And maybe last night, my partner almost got shot, or night before last, someone from another county got killed. And officers have to deal with going out each day with a new mindset and supposed to be a positive one, treating people as if they hadn't had any bad experiences at all. How often are they able to do that?
Well, I would certainly say that you're right. I would think that police officers, not all of them, but some, or maybe even all of them, especially ones that have been on the force for a while, probably have experienced a type of police type of PTSD, that like the ones that those in the military that served in combat may have experienced. I think it's very possible for police officers to have the same type, and just kind of like speaking to what you're saying, that they experience, they see people dying, death, and you know, homicide and all types of things that you probably, that we as people are shielded from. And so therefore they're on high alert all the time. They see threats all the time, you know, that may not necessarily be there. And so you realize that there may be something missing, like an emotional component, mental health component, in terms of helping those people when they do experience these types of situations, to kind of get them to recover and to get them back onto the force, instead of just like business as usual, you know?
Exactly. So. Exactly. In your heart, I mean, if you're going to exist in this profession and you don't think about the humanistic part of it, perhaps that's how you go home every night. Because I've had officers tell me that often. I just care about going home every night. That's all I care about. But then I've also had veteran officers that's been in the field for 20 years or more and never shot at anyone in their life. And then if you have this officer who's apparently, according to reports, killed 3 people, mm-hmm. then to me, that's a person that is definitely someone that should be under radar, mm-hmm. someone that should be highly supervised mm-hmm. and monitored. And so I don't know that they are desensitized or not, but something has to go into play, because you just can't kill people and not have any type of psychological effect on mm-hmm. you know? But the way that everything was done, it tells me several things. One, you're comfortable with what you did because you did it in front of people. Mm-hmm. You did it against people seeing it, mm-hmm. the inhumane part of it. I had to go back and try and look at the video, could not look at it in its entirety. People were talking about sitting still for 8 minutes, but I couldn't watch that video for 8 minutes. That was torture mm-hmm. to watch, you know. Were you able to watch mm-mm. it?
I've only been able to see the picture with his hand on his neck. And then, you know, I know we talked last time about he was calling out for his mother. And that really just took the cake for me, because after that, I read a lot of comments about people saying that he was calling out for his mom, who had passed away 2 years ago. And I was just like, right. I don't know that I could watch in real time a person dying in the manner in which they're dying, and then one of their final words is calling out for their mother. Like, I just do not think that that's something that I could really sit and watch. Yeah, I couldn't do it.
He said some things like, I lost faith. Okay, man, just get your hand off my neck. I can't feel nothing. I can't breathe. My stomach hurt. Everything hurt. I can't breathe. You know, just, and it, there's a guy saying, okay, man, just get your neck, your leg off his neck. It's a man saying it. Just get your knee off his neck. And he refused to do it. And then they were saying, man, he not breathing. Would you please check his pulse? So to me, that says so many things. One, you are totally not there. Mm-hmm. You know, two, you are totally arrogant and comfortable with doing this in front of people. Mm-hmm. So it's not your first rodeo. Right. You know, this is, you're comfortable with this. This is something you've done. And three, I don't even know if it was a crime of passion or what, because I know that they worked together before at this club. I don't know if there was history or there or something. I really don't know. Someone said that his brother-in-law was working with him, that one of those officers was his brother-in-law. I don't know.
One of the officers was whose brother-in-law? The George Floyd's brother-in-law?
No, the officer.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I heard that as well, that he was standing next to him.
Okay. Yeah, his wife's brother was standing next to him, which I thought that shouldn't be. I don't think two brother-in-law are supposed to work together.
Well, you know, that's like, did you hear that his wife is filed for divorce? So yeah. I don't know, you know, now we're kind of bringing in to play some marital issues that can certainly impact your ability to work, you know. The brother-in-law, I mean, that's really strange too. I don't even know what to make of that. Now, I want to go back to what you said, you know, him having his knee on his neck. Can he do that? I mean, is that protocol?
No.
Okay.
No. So according to the even the chief, who I think, and I actually plan on writing a letter to make sure that my voice is expressed in that manner, but I'm already told through media, which I want to thank the media, because I think the media is doing their part in trying to express the concerns of the community. Mm-hmm. They are covering this from head to toe. They don't have to. They don't. They are doing their part in trying to get parents to talk to their children about race. I've seen it over and over and over. So I do think that the media is doing their part to try and level the playing field for all Americans. I do appreciate that. But he does not have the right to do that. But the chief is allowed all these allegations to go toward this guy if what they've said is correct. And he hadn't held him accountable. So to me, I think that there's some issue on accountability with the department. So I'm told that FBI is going to go in and investigate the entire department, as they are with St. Louis in Breonna Taylor's case. Mm-hmm. And I'm told resigned in Breonna Taylor's case as soon as they found out that the FBI was coming in to do an investigation. And so I think that the chief is equally as responsible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is that, you know, they employ people that tend to have the same type of thinking, you know, at the same time, you know, so it's going to be possible that the chief is in the same line of thinking as his police officer, you know, like they all somewhat, not all the time, but they tend to have the same type of thinking, if that makes sense. Like that's what they have in common.
Well, yeah. Well, so if you have not reprimand me on these 10 or 18 reports of misconduct, well, I think if you agree with me, right. Why wouldn't you? You know? And so it's this, the slogan that's going around, if you're not doing anything about it, you're going along with it, right. You know? So he's playing the role because they really need, you know, leadership at this time. But I certainly hope they do hold him accountable as well, because mm-hmm. I do think that this could have been avoided.
Right.
But at the same time, I also think it had to happen. It had to happen exactly the way it did. The man called it. He said, they're about to kill me. Man, they're going to kill me because mm-hmm. they didn't take him. They took him across the street. You know, normally you would bring a car to the person. Mm-hmm. They took him out of the car and took him across the street to the police car. He knew that they were going to kill him. He said, they're going to kill me. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why he didn't want to get in that car.
Mm-hmm.
And he failed.
Mm-hmm.
And that man said, I mean, basically was going to kill him right there. You know, like, you're going to die. You know, that's the impression we get. My husband and I were talking about it. He said mm-hmm. he didn't want to get in that car. And now he was like, why? It was like maybe he had said something to him to make him feel like, you bet I'm going to get you. You know, and they worked together. So was there some history there or something? You know, people, they said people loved him. You know, everybody that knew him loved him.
Loved the police officer that has been charged?
No.
Okay.
No. The victim, George Floyd.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry about that. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, you know, there's some speculation as to whether there was history there between them, mm-hmm. Working mm-hmm. in the same place, jealousy, you know, any of that. Something definitely, it was some hatred in his heart that is inexplicable, and it could be race only. But
now I want to just go back to what you're saying. I want to get some clarity on this. So you're saying that there could potentially have been some history between the victim and the officer.
They worked together at a club,
like as a what, security or
right. So okay. The officer worked at security, and he was Mr. Floyd was a bouncer.
Okay. Got it. Okay. I did mm-hmm. not know that.
Yeah.
This news to me today. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so that has been verified. So that certainly does possibly put a spin on things, I would have to say.
Yeah. The owner of the club was on the news and said it. She didn't understand. They worked there.
Wow.
The one of the owners of one of the Bistros there said that he'd worked with him and he was like his best friend. I mean, he had a video. Someone posted a video that he put out on YouTube that was pleading to youngsters to stop killing. You know, he was like, he was cursing, using the N-word, but he was very, he was using the language needed to be used to express to the young people. Yeah. Man, y'all need to stop that. Right. It ain't no good. I don't know what's going on with y'all, man, but y'all need to stop it.
Wow.
So,
and that's really interesting that you bring that up, because I know with a lot of these sort of cases, we never really get to find out any certain, like, confirmed information if they had some kind of relationship or connection of some sort to each other. Right. We always just see the outset of it all just being about, obviously, just race, you know, and just, and that kind of leaving it at that. But we never know if there's ever anything personal. You know, that's right. Always some speculation. I mean, even with the Amber Geiger case, there was a speculation of did they, now they tried to say they didn't know each other. And I think that that would be correct. But then the question becomes, did she know of him? You know, because they lived in the same apartment complex. So they had something in common. But of course, there was never any evidence to really suggest either way, you know. So it's always that that's not something that we tend to think about, you know, but it's possible. So I don't know if you recall this case. This, and this will, what you're saying brings it to mind for me. It's a Dallas cop. I think this may have been 2008 or 9 or 7. It's been a long time. I believe his name was, first name is Norman. And Norman White or Norman Smith, I don't recall. But he was executing a warrant off duty. He wasn't supposed to be, though. And he, I guess, breaks down this door. And the people that were inside of it called the police because they thought that somebody was breaking into their home. And this is in Dallas. And because they didn't know who it was, the person that announced themselves, and they shot at him and he died. Okay. Well, these young men, they went to prison over this, because I guess what happened, what came out, is that these young men were informants for the police department. And, you know, so it kind of got strange. And I believe that this particular man that died, his wife was African-American. And then the strangest thing started happening after he passed away, when she was appearing like in music videos. And, you know, I remember following that case for a while when it happened, because it was the most strangest thing. They even had the men on the news talking, and they were adamant that he did not announce himself. I guess the idea was that he was executing a warrant, but he was off duty. I guess that may have been the story about that one. But he never announced himself, and he bust the door down, and they shot at him. But and so it was a really weird twist for a while. I know those two men are still in prison. I think I don't know what penalty they got, but they likely are still there. But yeah, it was something really strange about even just the wife, the widow, after he passed on, just her behavior just became really bizarre. And after that, so I don't know if you're familiar with that case, but that was several years ago.
I'm not okay. Familiar. I'm not familiar with that one, okay. But the guys went to prison for shooting him?
They did. They did go to prison for shooting him. But like I said, the twist was that they were his informants. And so that was kind of strange that he was delivering a warrant and he was off duty. So it was the whole thing. Basically, they were trying to paint this cop as like one of those crooked cops, you know, but of course that is not something. He's passed on that they would allow to be, you know, defaming his character, I suppose. He's passed on, so here we are, you know, making him sound like a crooked cop, you know, but even if it's the truth, right? So and so that's as far as I know. You know, I followed it in the beginning. I have never followed up, but it's remained with me over the years, because it was just so, had some strange elements to it. It was one of the cases where likely the police officer had a connection of some sort with these men. And then of course what the wife did on after the ex-wife, what she, her behavior became of after he passed on, was pretty interesting as well.
Right. So yeah, that's what we're talking about. The suspiciousness of it all, you know, the secret society and what we're privileged to. And I mean, you know, someone else was bringing that up to the other day about how the locks are different with those that are officers on properties. with the Botham Jean case, you know, and will we ever know the truth?
Right.
The truth is we never. Will never know the truth. But the reality is, and this is the honest truth, you know, it's sad. You know, the guy, Floyd's wife, fiance, is Anglo.
Mm-hmm.
Right? She said, I see all the hatred. I see all the anger. I see all the pain. And he would not want this. He would not want all these people hurting and hurting each other. He would not want that. And, you know, people were blasting her for saying that, right? Mm-hmm. They're saying, you shouldn't have been married. See what happens when you're about to marry or you're dating a white person? Because they are actually wanting peace. You know what I mean? And she's not saying she didn't want justice. She's just saying that he was not a man. And so his family said the same thing. Nobody's blasting them for that. But when she said it, it was an issue. Mm-hmm. And he was dating a white woman. You know, I didn't see her at the memorial service or anything. And
so you say he was dating a white woman and he was engaged to a white woman?
No, he was engaged to a white woman.
Okay, so it's the same woman. Okay.
Yeah. And I don't see them talking to her much, you know. It's kind of like they've shunned her.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of cold, too, because that goes back to our heart issue.
Mm-hmm.
What nationality you are, it matters not. There's a heart issue when you can go and vandalize buildings, burn up churches. It's a heart issue when you can put your knee on somebody's neck, is my point.
Right.
And until we're willing to acknowledge our part in our behaviors in these things, we're not going to get the answers we want long term. You get what I mean?
So what do you think about the rioting and the you know the violent protesting of it all, the looting and everything? What do you think? Do you feel like it has its place, you know, in this type of struggle?
I do. I don't encourage it, but I do. I think I said it last segment. I'm not sure, but I do know that. So in fear of being redundant, I say that, but I just want to say. It has I think it has its place. Rioting is definitely not something that I would do.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that rioting speaks to the pain of some people, and it even speaks to if they are hired to do it, right? Some people are hired to do certain things or doing it for free. So you gotta be able to do those things. I can't do certain things, period. I don't have the heart to do it, right? So I think that people are missing that element. They're missing the point that I may or may not be able to accomplish certain things because I don't have the heart to do that. Mm-hmm. But if I had, listen, if there was not any rioting out there, would you be as interested in listening to my peaceful protest is my question.
Right. And you know, you brought up a good point when you said that some of these individuals are hired. I have a personal experience with working what is called a crisis event. And it's done to assist law enforcement and paramedics and the fire department and how to respond to a natural disaster of some sort. And the people that participate in it are not real. You know, they're actors, I guess I would say. And I actually participated in an event just like that. And, you know, where the actors range from individuals who are have makeup on to show that they have been hurt. And then, or you can either be like in distress, so you can seem like you're just kind of lost and confused in a daze. And I participated in one, so I know that some people could be doing it for another benefit, you know, if that makes sense, you know.
Right.
Like you mentioned being paid to do it. So it's a part of the movement And you might be volunteering to do it, but you're doing it for some sort of outcome, right?
Right.
And it's not for anything else. So, I mean, and that's another way of looking at it. I don't think people really know that that what all goes in when it comes to protesting, because not everybody is there for the same reason.
Right.
You know, so that's a good point.
But there are depths of pain is what I'm trying to explain to people. You cannot give me, like the song was saying, you cannot give me the hurt that you give me and expect for me to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
Be peaceful. The mm-hmm. movie, I never saw it, but the lyrics, the title, the mm-hmm. hate you give is enough to tell you the hate you give me. And you want me to just be peaceful?
Right. That's another thing. You're right about that. That's another angle. A lot of people are just kind of, like I said, we talked about this last time, quoting MLK and how he responded, you know? So I believe that it has its place in what's going on, because people are not just protesting about George Floyd, you know, they're protesting about Botham Jean and a number of other individuals who have died at the hands of police brutality. They're protesting about oppression. You know, they're protesting probably about COVID-19 and how African Americans are have a higher rate of contracting the illness. And look, we got all these restrictions lifted, you know. And another thing I thought about, I don't know if this is even relevant, but I thought to myself, would all these people be able to riot if the restrictions were still in place? would this really have happened this way if, you know, because there's that controversy that the restrictions were lifted too soon.
Mm-hmm.
So then the question becomes that, could they have done all that they've done? Been their businesses, a lot of them, some of them are closed or closing down early because of protesting, right? But look at how, you know, would this have happened if we would have still had restrictions in place, you know? And how come nobody's complaining about the curfew, but everybody want to complain about businesses being shut down? What is really the difference here? We got curfew, that's a law. I mean, you know, business to shut down, that whatever, you know. So I just feel like the conversation gets kind of funny now, because you have your individual saying that infringes on our civil liberties if we can't leave our home or we got a shelter in place, right?
Right.
But how is that different from a curfew, you know? So it's really interesting.
It goes back to business. I mean, you know, this is what America has established for us. And this mm-hmm. is where people have said money matters, right?
Right.
So if it's a curfew to keep you from messing with my business, I'm good. But if it's if you're messing with business, we're not good. And
right.
That's why, you know, they're saying burn up your businesses in your own community. But a lot of the businesses burned that I saw may have been in the neutral or northern areas. I didn't see a whole lot in the neighborhoods anymore like they were before. So they're learning, you know, I don't hear a whole lot of people saying, you're burning up businesses in your own neighborhood. I'm not hearing that anymore. I'm hearing, you're burning up businesses. What is that going to do? Well, it's got you talking. It's got you looking. It's got you calling the Black Lives Matters organizers saying, what can we do? What do we need to do? Before then, y'all wasn't listening. You weren't even caring, you know? And that's unfortunate. It's sad, but it's unfortunate that people care about their own business, their own money, their own finances. And if you want to get their attention, that's how you do it.
But I want to go there with you on this one, because I hear people saying that too about, you know, this is, I've actually heard people say this is your community, you know, Dallas is your community, you know, this county or whatever. And the thing about it is, you know, Black people don't own that community. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, when we talk about home ownership or business ownership, what are the numbers that they are even owning? That's why for me, that would be one of the reasons why somebody would not care, because I don't own this. I don't own anything, you know, with my property on. And that's another layer, because how many people of color are able to have home ownership?
Yeah.
You know,
That's right.
I mean, and then I also read an article that a number of the people who were protesting don't even live in Dallas.
Oh yeah.
You know, so yeah. Then you have that layer too, that those people don't even, you know, they don't even live in that area. So they, it's another reason why they don't care. They don't live in there. They don't see it.
Right.
You know? So, I mean, it's, there's so many, there's so, like you said, there's so much depth to all of this, you know? And it's not just one thing. I don't know if you saw, it in the news, but a classmate of mine a couple days back was at the McDonald's in McKinney, and he was cut off by a lawn service in line. And did you hear about that?
I saw it. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was actually the young man. I went to school with him, and I just could not believe that happened. I mean, I'm glad that the man, Chris Taylor, I believe that was his name, went to jail. You know, and he was held accountable for his actions, but. It's also, again, it kind of reinforces something for us people of color in a way that have to go out into the world and go to McDonald's, you know? Yeah. And I think I saw one person commenting on his post, like, why did you even get out of the car? You know? And I'm just like, I really hate when people have that mentality, you know, because it, again, it takes it off of the person who's in the wrong.
Yeah.
You know, the person that's being violent or the abuser, if you want to call it that, you know, it takes it off of them and it puts it off onto the victim.
Yeah.
You know, like how should the victim respond?
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so it's really, you know, it's sad. He got headbutted twice. And he spit on him. Ooh. And And so I don't know if you know, I read that can carry like a charge of a aggravated assault with a deadly weapon for somebody to spit on you, because you don't know what that person has. AIDS, I mean, or HIV, or coronavirus, even,
right?
You know, so it's just like, you don't spit on people,
right?
You know, and so I mean, this, I think that in the video, he was alluding to the fact that he may have been intoxicated. So it's possible that he was drunk, doing this under some type of influence. I don't know. He wasn't charged with being under the influence, right? So he might not have been, you know. But that's just, and I think it even makes it even worse if you think about it. If this person is not under any influence, like, either way, it's wrong, right?
Right.
But especially, you did this in a sober mind, you know. It's really off-putting in that sense, you know. So I try to be mindful when I go places to not. You know, and the reason why I'm saying that is because I have license plates. I have a disabled veteran license plates, which would allow me to park in handicapped spots. And I get harassed a lot by older white men about parking there.
Yeah.
And so that can be scary, you know, especially when you're carrying children, because you don't know who you're talking to, you know. And so stuff like that, you know, puts me kind of in a position where, you know, I almost don't want to park in any sort of handicapped space, because I don't want to be harassed by somebody who thinks that they have the right to talk to me. Right. They don't own the store. They don't own the parking spot. You know, but they feel entitled.
Right.
And I think that's a lot of what we're seeing, a lot of entitlement here.
Right. That's right. And so what we're dealing with is entitlement and ignorance and jealousy, and I mean, you know, that's why we can't deal with it, because it's not just one thing. It's not just entitlement, it's ignorance, it's jealousy, it's insecurity. It's a lot of those things that make this animal so difficult to kill, right? And fear. You know, I struggled for years with this quote. And now I know why. It took me all these years to realize it. And again, I'm not sure if we talked about it or not, but my greatest fear is not that I'm inadequate, but that I'm powerful beyond measure. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, that's not my greatest fear. That's others' greatest fear. You get it?
Right.
See, I'm not afraid of that. I'm like, why the hell would I be afraid of that? I'm not afraid of that. And that lady that created that quote scared the crap out of me, because I'm thinking, why am I afraid of that? But it's not me. It's the others that are afraid of that. They don't think we're inadequate. they know how powerful we are. They know how phenomenal we are. They know how dominant we can be. If our mind is made up and we have the ability to do it, it's done. That's just the way we, mm-hmm. God gave us that because we're the underdog. He knew right. it. So he gave us the talents, the gifts that we needed. And so I say all of that to say, we need to make sure that our hearts are pure. We need to make sure that we are operating with a heart that God can use. It's so easy to develop a heart that is hard or hardened by things that we've encountered through life. I cannot see myself ever being the monster that took the life of Mr. Floyd. I desire not to have ever developing that type of animosity and anger in my heart. But if we're not very careful about how we handle ourselves, if we're not careful about how we see things, how we process things, if we're not careful about being close to our Creator and being grateful for what we have, listening to a lot of information on the social media and the internet in the news to just this last 2 weeks is enough to clog your heart up. And we really need to take a moment and decompress, pull the plug. Listening to the ceremony yesterday was really helpful. Hearing what type of person Mr. Floyd was and to hear his family laugh and to hear that they were okay and that they were confident that they were going to get justice. We need to fill our lives with that balance of love and thanksgiving and gratitude and peace and joy. It cannot be just filled with the troubles and challenges of our society, our inequalities and unfairness of life, because your hearts can become hardened. While we're sitting here just outraged by this man's behavior, we can literally become him because of what he's done. Mm-hmm. And we have to be very careful not to do that. And the way you do that is cultivate your heart, protect your heart from the things that are going in, process things in a healthy way so that you know that in my mind, the way I process this is it had to happen this way. It had to happen this way so that people could see how intense this pain and this hatred has been on so many in darkness for so many years. So many couldn't fathom this treatment from a professional that is vowed to protect. But everyone saw. And if you wanted to turn your head away, you could do that and turn back and it was still there. You could close your eyes, you could leave the room and come back and it was still there. So it wasn't anything that we can act as if didn't happen. We needed it to happen that way, unfortunately. Thank God Mr. Floyd was, although he said he's lost faith, thank God he was a man that lived of faith, and I pray that life has served him well. He was calling his mom, so I'm hoping that she was there to greet him in his final breath. I pray that his family and his children will find refuge, that his life, all of us will die, but I pray that his life will not be in vain. I've heard that in Virginia, the governor has already declared that Robert E. Lee's monument will be taken down. I've seen where the university there in Minnesota has created a scholarship for humanities to study and to make sure that work in policing and equality continues. And they challenged all universities all over the world to do the same thing. I've seen our sisters and brothers in other nationalities step up, and that has caused tears to literally roll down my face, because it shows that everyone is not like that guy. And it shows that there is more love in the world than that hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And it,
right.
And it also shows that his life before this was worthy of all of this transpiring for. And mm-hmm. I just can't help but to ask and encourage people that perhaps feel like they didn't get a chance to march, so they don't know what they could do to make a difference. But maybe your thing would be, because they said that he was leaving Texas to go to Minnesota for a different life, a new life. So maybe your change would be going to school, truck driving school like he was. Maybe it would be to be a better dad or mom. Maybe it would be to give or volunteer to other people. I just encourage us to protect our hearts, create that balance so that we don't allow all the negativity to cloud our hearts, that we have hope, love, joy, and peace flowing. And we have to be very deliberate in making it possible for our heart to receive that. So we have to listen to positive podcasts and YouTube videos and Bible scriptures and music, friends that are talking positively. And then secondly, we need to do something in the form of positivity for others and ourselves to better ourselves, to receive that that level of respect that we deserve, so that when people don't give it to us, we can hold them accountable. We can report it. We can support each other in it.
I also want to add that while you were mentioning the ways in which leadership is making some change, the D.C. mayor, I don't know if you heard this, but the D.C. mayor, Muriel Bowser, changed the name of the street that leads to the White House to Black Lives Matter Plaza.
Are you serious?
So I just wanna, so I just wanted to also add that in, that there is going to be change. And I'm more confident now than I've ever been in the past.
That's so awesome. That is so awesome. Mm-hmm. I did not know that. Yes.
Yep.
And that is just his little way of making sure that it, life is not the same post May 25th.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. I agree. So what can people do if they, you know, they want to find you, they want to talk with you more about what's going on, or even personal problems that they're experiencing, or even someone that might be like in a crisis that they need to have somebody to talk to? What can people do? How can they find you?
So you can reach us via email, Lankford Avenue, LANKFORD Avenue at yahoo.com. You can call us at 214-870-4129. I've actually conducted life coaching sessions throughout this week with people that have just called and said, hey, I just need somebody to talk to. We're actually establishing a line where you can call us if you need assistance with the police, if you feel like you've been unjustly treated or mistreated in some sort of way. We'll walk you through the process of how to file a complaint and, you know, support you in that. A lot of times people are intimidated by that process, and I get it. But you got to know that you have to do it, because this particular guy had that those people did their part in writing complaints about him, but the police, mm-hmm. the police chief did not do his part in holding them accountable. And so now the police chief is going to have to be held accountable for that. But if they had mm-hmm. not done their part, then we wouldn't have anything to hold him accountable to, or the monster that did this heinous act. So we definitely have to do our part. And lastly, we must elect people that care about our best interest. As a public official, when I talk to people about casting their votes, and I tell them that I will do the very best that I can, and if they call me and tell me they have a concern, I will work on it at the best of my ability. I mean what I said. If I don't do it, then they have a responsibility to get someone else in that office that will. That's how it works. And so every law, your representatives, you should have their numbers on your dial, on your contact list in your phones, and you should be able to call them if you have a problem in your community, and let them know if you have issues you need them to address. If they're not willing to address your concerns, then you have a responsibility to get someone else in there that will. And that's what accountability is all about. If we can do those things, we will see drastic changes within our communities. Thank you so much for joining in with us. Thank you so much, Chrissy. Thank you so much for producing. Hope you all have a wonderful, lighthearted weekend.
We'd like to send a special thanks to our supporters and for those listening. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast and leave us a rating or review on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or Spotify. Have yourself a great day, and be sure to join us next time on Healthy-ish. Healthy-ish is proudly supported by Langford Avenue and the Avenue Proactive Resource Center. For more information, visit our website at www.enddomesticviolenceindallas.com or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter.